This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The 0-2 from Crochet. He struck him out! 98. He has 11 strikeouts.
2-2 to Stormy is drilled high and deep into left field, at the track, at the wall. Goodbye! Travers Story launches. 1-2. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. He got him. Chapman glares in at Taylor. Ball game over. The Red Sox win it 3-1. We thought we might see history from Garrett Crochet. He returns to Chicago. He dominates.
High noon, Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. I'm still annoyed. Not just that Crochet lost the no-hitter. I'm still annoyed Cora took him out. I don't even think Mydroth had reached first base yet after he got the hit to break the thing up, and Cora was taking him out of the game. I'm still annoyed they took him out at 96 pitches, but that's a minor nitpick for a great, great start from Garrett Crochet yesterday, and a great start to his Red Sox career. It was a terrible weekend for the Red Sox, make no mistake. And I was charitable and gave him a bit of an excuse against Toronto. I'm like, okay, they won the final game of that series. They needed a win. They walked it off. Okay, the first three games were really bad, but deep breath. They survived. They won a game against Toronto and didn't get swept. I can't give them the same benefit of the doubt against the crap-ass White Sox.
The White Sox are the worst. I don't think we can even do it justice to say how bad they are.
You needed a near no-hitter. You still barely eked out the win yesterday. I can't give them that same excuse that I gave them against Toronto. And in retrospect, I probably gave them too much in the win against Toronto. I was way too forgiving in the win against Toronto. This is a terrible, terrible Red Sox weekend against one of the worst teams in baseball history.
Toronto's not even that good, right? No, I don't think Toronto's a playoff team, and then you lose 3 out of 4 there. And now you're playing the White Sox where we say, all right, a chance to kind of go from a 500 team to maybe, you know, plus 5, plus 6 over the next 10 games, where you play two series against Chicago, who once again lost 121 games last season, and they had Garrett Crochet. They had Garrett Crochet, who's the best guy. Yeah,
you took him away. You added him to you.
Right.
And you're still getting smoked by this team.
Last I checked, they didn't add anybody great. No. They are still in the toilet. I don't know how much of the series you watched.
They have Cam Boozer. I didn't realize that until yesterday.
Oh, the Booze.
Yeah, they got him. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Liked him in the clubhouse. They have him. That was an ad.
Really emotional. Glad he's still with the big club.
Yeah.
I was watching the game Friday night. Really, it applies to all these games. But Friday night specifically, the seats. It was like, why even have the game? Like, was it COVID? Like, did they close off the gates?
Well, I mean, look, Fenway with the crummy weather was pretty empty the last week plus, but it wasn't that empty.
This was wild.
I think on Saturday they actually had a good turnout. I forget.
Better on Saturday.
No, I forget what they said they had. They had, like, some stupid promotion where they, like, forced people into
Ron
the ballpark.
Ron Karkovice night? Ron Karkovice bobblehead?
But Friday and Sunday were poorly attended, which makes sense. They suck.
Yeah, it was really bad. Friday's announced attendance was 13,432.
I'm gonna guess it was half of that.
I think it's more than the 432. They weren't on screen. Then
Saturday's was 30,000.
No, I'm saying they like jam-packed people in the ball. I forget what the dumb excuse was, but they had people.
Bobby Thigpen night?
Not for the game.
They Bobby had people Thigpen that Pigpen?
Where they stop giving away random players. You're gonna need those later in the week.
Oh, no, that's right. Chicago comes back on Friday.
Yeah.
Robin Ventura night. So they there was nobody, and then they would like pan behind the Red Sox dugout, and it'd be like two fans in Red Sox stuff.
Yeah.
So like, there's no White Sox fans to be found. So
now, again, let's
why
be fair.
They be?
I mean, Red Sox fans weren't showing up last homestand, let's be fair.
They're not very good right now either.
No, they're not.
But the White Sox were 2-10 entering the series. They were fresh off an 8-game losing streak.
Uh huh.
And they smack you around on Friday night. They just blitz you Friday night. The Red Sox are booting the ball all over the yard. It's everything right now that they can't do. I mean, they can't hit. They scored 18 runs Sunday night against the Cardinals, and it has been flat ever since. They're actually getting some good pitching performances, but they can't even win those games.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is what it was. It was a whiskey crawl.
They
had a whiskey crawl leading the ball. That's what it was. They said that's this on amazing. The broadcast yesterday. They had a whiskey crawl, which got people to the ballpark on
Saturday.
Where
the hell are we now?
Thank you, text line. That's 100% game. What it was.
Whiskey crawl.
They had to force people into the ballpark.
Drunks.
Getting shmammered.
They got drunks.
Leading into the ballpark. Yeah, that's how they had to get people to show up to a White Sox game.
We'll pay you in whiskey to watch
honestly,
the White Sox.
The way the Red Sox are starting, they're not that far away from it.
I think Sam Kennedy took notes. that's a good idea.
Somewhere Dr. Charles is like, that's a good idea.
Whiskey night. Yeah. All right. We'll see you guys in August. We'll be back for whiskey night. You know, that was such a bad start, and then you lose a close game on Saturday, and you're saying you just lost two games to the freaking White Sox. Like, that takes some doing. And then it's obviously good that you were able to win a game yesterday, but you needed Garrett Crochet to pitch a gem and then Trevor Story. So you had one guy hit, one guy pitch, and you were able to win.
What was the Rich Keefe stats and info number here again? This is good.
18 runs scored Sunday Night Baseball against the Cardinals. In the seven games after that, 14.
Not great.
14 runs.
And you've gone to extra innings in a bunch of those games.
Yep,
I mean, twice. At least, right? Was it only twice?
Yeah, just the two Toronto games.
Okay.
Chicago, yeah.
Chicago.
Bottom of the ninth walk-off.
I'm sorry, you're right. That didn't technically go to extra innings. Yeah, but they have had some extra innings in there.
They have.
On top of it, to scratch out runs in some cases.
They can't score.
So they
where it's designed for you to score.
Correct. Correct.
Right.
No, they're not great at getting a guy in from second with nobody
literally out. Put a guy in scoring position for you.
One note on the lineup, which underscores how poor they've been offensively. They did drop Cassis in the order yesterday.
He's been a big problem.
He has been a big problem.
Yeah, he's been the worst player on the team, I think. When you factor in kind of level of expectation, he's just been a mess. And you're like, all right, he's going to be the cleanup hitter. Craig Breslow said 40 home runs, 110 RBI.
And I'll tell you, from watching the clubhouse and subjecting myself to forcing myself to watch that.
Yeah, I still haven't finished.
Breslow is bullish on Cassis and that as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they kind of have to be now that Vlad Guerrero signed a $500 million deal to stay in Toronto.
It's true.
There's not even the, hey, next year you're going to get Vlad Guerrero. Instead, Tristan Casas, who is hitting .185 with one home run. And a .551 OPS
not
and
great.
A negative WAR.
Not great. Not going to get it done.
No.
So they've dropped Cassis down in the order. Abreu hit cleanup yesterday. Cassis, to his credit, responded. He had a hit and a walk. He's on base twice in that game yesterday. But they're finally reacting. I don't want to say overreacting. They're reacting to their poor start. You've got to start shaking the lineup up to wring something out of the lineup. Drop Cassis down. Yeah. Embarrass him a little bit. Or just take the pressure off by dropping him down, if you want to look at it that way. And reward Abreu for the start that he's had. Were you annoyed like I was at pulling Crochet? I know we've talked about his workload and if he can handle it. I mean, yesterday didn't look like a game where he was laboring at all.
No.
He's mowing guys down. He had a walk in the sixth. He gives up one hit in the eighth. He's at 96 pitches. I mean, in theory, and this isn't exactly the kind of pitcher that he is.
Yeah.
But in theory, one ground ball, double play, you're out of the inning at 97 pitches. I didn't like pulling him from the game there. I didn't like it at all.
I don't know. I've honestly kind of gone real soft with pitchers. I'm terrified. Like, I think they all get hurt all the time. They're the most fragile things in the world. Remember his second start? I was like, you're putting him back out there?
Yeah.
I was like,
I don't know what he was going into that, but he finished that start with 102, which at the time was one off a career high. His last start was 107, which was a career high.
I honestly would have pulled him because you had Whitlock and Chapman good to go. If you didn't have those guys, if it was one of those things, and Chapman's been nails, and but let's say he wasn't available.
Besides Saturday, but yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, he finally gave up a run. But like those guys, if they weren't available, you'd be game's kind of too close at that point to just hand it over to anybody. But no, at that point, I was personally okay with it because it's a long slog.
Well, I'll tell you, if they lost that, and this would not have been a second guess, and I'll give Core credit for it, they ended up being right. I mean, Whitlock got boned on a call. He gave up a run. An inherited runner, but he gave up a run, and he wound up getting out of the inning, and they won the game anyway. Right. So, like, no harm, no foul. But I would have been kicking and screaming if Cora, and I would have put the loss on Cora if the bullpen came in and blew the game yesterday. Yeah. I would have put the loss on Cora. They win 3-1. They avoid the sweep. The first two games, they lose in the ninth on Saturday, 3-2. They get blown out on Friday, 11-1. Their strikeout and error totals continue to skyrocket in this series. All the errors were clustered in the first game. They had five of them.
Five errors.
They made sure to get that out of their system in the series opener on Friday night. No errors Saturday or Sunday, but 5 in the series. They had 29 more strikeouts in the series, 11, 11, and then 7 yesterday. They lead the bigs in both of those categories by a healthy margin in the errors department. The team they lead in both those categories, the Colorado Rockies, who are 3-12.
Yeah, not a good outfit.
Maybe, arguably, the worst team in baseball, although they're neck and neck with this team, the Red Sox saw yesterday. So that's frustrating. They're 8-9. They should have been fattening up on the White Sox, and instead, now they're a game under 500 with 3 more against the Rays here starting in Tampa.
They had 1 more run scored than they did error in the series against the White Sox. 6-5.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, 6-5.
Good for them. At least they were able to get their nose above water there in that department. So I was flipping into the Red Sox quite a bit yesterday. One more time, let's go around the horn. I was mostly watching the Masters yesterday. High drama, wildly entertaining. Rory would blow the lead. He did it immediately. Blow the lead, get it right back. DeChambeau yacked on himself. I've maintained that you need somebody. If you're trying to choke away the Masters, which Rory did, you need other people complicit in the choke to give it right back to Rory. I maintain that Rose had some sketchy spots as well, which people have pushed back on. But I was pretty locked in on the Masters. I was slipping in on Crochet while he still had the no-hitter going. I was slipping in even after he lost it. But it was secondary in my viewing experience yesterday. You must have been riveted by the Masters, right?
Red Sox for me. Battle of the Sox. There can only be one sock, red and white. So I was watching that. And I'm up to my eyeballs in Yellow Jackets.
Oh, good.
I binge watching Yellow Jackets.
So you were getting that in yesterday?
Yeah, Sox and Yellow Jackets.
So grand total, what? You like an hour of the Masters?
No,
hour
less,
and a half?
No, it was a lot less than that. I said, what am I doing? Why? I'm not really all that interested, so I'm not going to do it.
Okay, well, Keith must
be. I'm a busy man.
Keith has to be an outlier here, right?
Maybe I'm the only one.
Billy, how much Masters did you take in yesterday?
Zero.
Just looked at my phone maybe real quick because it was like the front page of the app, and then I'm like, all right,
yeah,
you
couldn't
baseball
avoid
skills?
Yeah, you're like, scroll. You're like, get this out of my
couldn't
face.
Avoid, yeah.
Okay. Billy, zero, but okay.
0 minutes.
Two of you.
Seconds.
It can't be three. Nick?
0.0.
So what did you give us on Friday? Did you say 2.5 hours?
Two and a half hours.
You hit the over? Easy.
For the weekend.
No.
For Sunday?
Yes, I was at like 5 or 6 yesterday.
I think he thought on Friday that between
the three of us.
The three of you would get to 2.5 hours.
No.
You just sit that at 30 seconds.
You didn't get to 1 minute. Of you combined didn't get to 1 minute of the Masters yesterday.
I really didn't. Yeah. How about us? What were you doing, Nick? How'd you fill your time out?
I'm rewatching Breaking Bad. I got two episodes that left.
That's good.
I was watching The Sox.
Rewatching Breaking Bad.
How much you got to rewatch?
Breaking Bad rewatches over the Masters. Any day of the week. I don't care.
His Breaking Bad is my Storage Wars.
Oh, he asked you deep into Storage Wars, though?
Gotten real into it.
Okay. These are just other options. That's the thing. That Masters is battling all these other options.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yellow Storage Jackets, Wars. Breaking Bad. Storage Wars.
How much is this junk? I got to find out.
When did Breaking Bad end?
We're watching 10-year-old shows over the Masters.
When did Breaking Bad end?
Oh. 2015, 2016, somewhere around there.
Jeez, I think earlier than that.
Okay. So, I mean, I understand the urgency on Nick's end. Terp kind of sort of had an excuse. He was at the Celtics yesterday covering that. So professionally, he had an obligation.
Yeah, he did.
However, that game was 1 o'clock. Like the Masters ran until like 7 p.m. Like, you could have come home and watched a couple of holes, Terp, end of it.
When did it end? When was the playoff hole?
I'm going to guess 7-ish. I honestly don't know, but I feel like it was around 7 o'clock.
Oh, at that point, Kat
was really starting to get annoyed that it was going to a playoff hole.
This is still going.
Yeah,
I'm like,
it's still going.
Hey, it's free golf.
Yeah.
We got free golf.
Okay. So none of them.
No.
Watched any of the Masters.
Wasn't for me.
Well, mix in your. No. You had Yellow Jackets. Billy had Storage Wars. Storage Wars.
Nick's catching up on Breaking Bad again.
Not the third or fourth time.
Yeah, not for the first time. A rewatch. A rewatch.
And the Kill Tony special on Netflix. I watched
that. Oh, good. Yeah, let's chalk that up as well.
Funny?
Yeah, it was funny.
It's good?
It was very funny. Yeah. Much funnier than golf.
Tune
into golf. This guy's whispering, but he's 10 miles away from where the guy's shooting.
I'm going to tell you, if you like people puking on themselves, yesterday was somewhat funny. You can jump in, 617-779-7937 with all your Masters and Red Sox thoughts here. I got a terrible weekend for the Sox. Mark's in Warwick. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi,
just to talk about the Rory win yesterday. I mean, just to think about how his back nine went, we were thinking this guy's got a surefire walk going into it, and he's going to win. I think it just makes his story even better at the end of the day. He's probably was the most deserving person to win it at the tournament. So, when he was going to a playoff, I just was getting flashbacks to the U.S. Open with Bryson, just thinking, has he really let this one go too?
Yeah, so, Mark, I think long-term, the story's going to be told that way, where Rory dealt with adversity, and it was up and down, and he had to battle through it, and every time he wanted to gag it away, he answered with a big shot, which would include the playoff hole where he sticks his second shot and, you know, is able to putt out for the win. I think that's how history is going to tell it and how it's going to be spun. If you were watching in real time, it was not a feel-good story. Although we did get a good response, Keith, when you were asking earlier the popularity of Rory, which I'm no golf expert. I don't pretend to be a golf expert. I watch Sundays at the majors.
Yeah,
okay?
People like him?
Well, it's a good point on the text line. The answer to the question, if you were watching the coverage yesterday, they would cut to the crowd and, you know, you can't use your phone at the Masters. They're updating the scoreboard. So, like, you're literally sitting there on some of the 18th green, for instance, and you're seeing the scoreboard updated, and their reaction to Rory blowing the lead multiple times was just like audible gasps and people putting their hands on their heads and
so
things like this.
So they were rooting for him, you
think? Well, I mean,
they like that story best, I guess.
I'll take the popularity answer on the face of it. He seems like a popular golfer. I really don't pretend to know. I was pulling for him selfishly because I had my bet on it. If I didn't wager on it, I would have been rooting against him. Because I like order to be restored on the planet, and I like when chokers choke. I would have liked for Sergio Garcia to never win a major. I would like for Rory to never win the Masters. Like, that's what I would be rooting for if I didn't wager on it.
All right, let me throw another analogy at you.
Good.
And I know Tiger hasn't been at the top of his game for a super long time.
No.
But Tiger kind of leaving the PGA Tour in the state that it is it similar to Jordan walking away in, like, 95?
Yeah, probably.
Right? So, like, you still have some good guys in there. You're like, all right, you want to watch, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon? Like, he's really good, but it's not anywhere near. It's like, hey, we're handing the league off to Clyde Drexler.
And I think Rory's one of the few, like I said this earlier, and I do think the Masters got a bit of a perfect storm yesterday, as good as you can get in the post Tiger Phil era.
Right.
You had high drama for a guy chasing the career slam.
Mm-hmm.
He's never won the Masters specifically before. He's battling himself on the golf course. And on top of that, he's a guy people recognize. Like, generic golf fans recognize the name Rory.
Yeah,
McIlroy.
No, he is one of, five names that people know.
It wasn't Oberg and, Oberg and Rose, rather, were at the top of the leaderboard. But if that was the duel, it would look very different,
I think.
And so I think it was a bit of a perfect storm. And it was good, high drama yesterday. Red Sox, a little less of that. But you had some drama going on with Garrett Crochet as well, tiptoeing the line on initially a perfect game and then a no-hitter. When it comes to the Red Sox, and we mentioned this earlier, and I just want to circle back to it, there's a sizable, it's early crowd where they're 8-9, don't worry about it. Yeah, they lost 3 out of 4 to Toronto, and they're not very good. And yeah, they dropped 2 out of 3 to the White Sox, who may be one of the worst teams in baseball history. They certainly were a year ago. They didn't look much better before they ran into the Red Sox, 2-10, going into that series, the fewest wins in baseball going into the series where they doubled their win total. There's a sizable, it's early crowd. Don't worry about it. You can't overreact, which is fine, and you might be right. You know, those people were largely, it seems, right on Rafael Devers. You would be wrong, though, about the Boston Bruins. We heard this early on in the year last season, Keith, or this season that's about to wrap up for the Bruins. Early on, well, it's early. Yeah, they're giving up a lot of goals, but Swayman wasn't there, and it's early, and don't worry about it, and the Bruins will be fine, and they'll be in the playoffs. And I believed a lot of that, just like I believe it with the Red Sox. If you're asking me today, do I still think they'll be a playoff team? I do. That's really more of a commentary on the American League than the way they've played to this point. But I do, and I believe that with the Bruins, I was wrong. It wasn't just early for the Bruins. The start told us something about that team. And I wonder if the start is telling us something about the Red Sox. You can jump in on it again, 617-779-7937. As for the Bees, though, Greg Hill snuck in a little report today.
How about this?
That on Wednesday, he expects there to be a front office resignation.
Wow, and we kind of narrowed that down to really only two names, right? Who else would even apply?
Who could
besides
it be besides Neely and Sweeney?
Yeah, I think that's it.
I mean, Joe Sacco can't resign from anything. He doesn't even have a real job.
No.
He's the interim head coach, and he's not in the front office. So unless I'm missing somebody, it's got to be one of those two. Hmm. And we both would imagine that's got to be Sweeney.
So if it's just one, I think it has to be Sweeney. The outside chance that it's both, I guess, right? Because if it was just Neely, for example,
that'd be weird.
Yeah, because then somebody else takes Neely's job and is like, yeah, Don's the guy I want. Or aren't they? Like, they're very much linked together. I think there's much more likely a scenario where Cam Neely stays in his role and hires another Don Sweeney than certainly the figuring out how the other option would work out. So they keep Don. So this would be the argument against it. Is if you're just going to force him to resign, that's also what it sounds like. If you're going to force him to resign.
I don't think he's resigning out of his own good nature.
Spend more time with the family. See you later.
Well, that's what they'll say. I mean, that's what Ainge said. I mean, Ainge was
he
like,
took a job 3 months later.
Thank you. Yeah. So I can't imagine it's on his own volition.
Yeah, so
I bet whoever it is being forced out.
So he gets kicked out, and then, but you, if you kind of knew that, you're going to let him trade your entire roster at the deadline? Unless you're like, hey, Don's good at trading.
They almost played it perfectly.
So
let's
let you trade all these guys. You do that. And but then when it comes to the draft, hopefully we're going to have the number one overall pick in the draft. If not, 2, 3, 4, somewhere in there. And we're going to let somebody else kind of pull the strings on these drafts, because Don Sweeney trades have been great. Draft, much more of a mixed bag, if not bad. So and also, Don Sweeney hiring yet another coach.
Wait, how many coaches do you get to hire?
Right. Like, at some point, like, you're just going to be out.
No,
so
you brought me around to this side of the street where it's like, how are you going to let Don Sweeney, and I said this going into the trade deadline, I'm like, how are you going to let him make a million trades and then move on from the guy at the end of the offseason? Well, it turns out maybe they threaded the needle perfectly. Sweeney makes all your NHL-level trades, mm-hmm. and it looks like maybe you got some guys back. Maybe Mittelstadt can play. You hope hold your breath and hope that Fraser Minton can play and some of these other guys. So you let him do that, which he's actually good at. And he got you a good return on some of these trades. The Marchand one, not so much, but I think Marchand had to go. So you let him handle that. You bring in somebody else to make the pick at 4 or whatever it's going to be. And they threaded that needle perfectly. Again, just to close the loop, Chris Curtis tweeted this out early today. I didn't hear it. I guess it was Greg's lead.
Yes.
Greg Hill is hearing there will be a resignation in the Bruins front office on Wednesday. And we got to narrow that down to Sweeney or Neely. So we'll mix in your thoughts on that. 617-779-7937, along with the Red Sox and the Masters. Speaking of the Red Sox and their poor start, how much of it is on the manager, Alex Cora? Let's get to that.
3 balls and 2 strikes to Duran. The pitch is swung on and missed. He got him. And the ball game is over. A night to forget for the Red Sox. But hopefully a night to remember for Coop. The fireworks explode. 11-1 Chicago. Sox need to bounce back tomorrow in a big-time way.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Red Sox avoid the sweep yesterday. Garrett Crochet, dominant, as he's been for much of the start to his Red Sox career, flirting with a no-hitter. Had one into the eighth inning before we lost it. Cora pulled him after 96 pitches, which bothered me, but at the end of the day, no harm, no foul. You can jump in on the Red Sox. Our discussions as well about the Masters. Rory attempting to choke it away before breaking through and getting the career slam. Are you happy for him? And on top of that, Greg's report that somebody's resigning in the Bruins front office on Wednesday. You can jump in on all of that here on Jones and Keefe. Something to mix in. And yes. I was surprised to read this today, Keefe. ESPN did a watchability ranking, almost like the league pass rankings that we've talked about before in the NBA. Who does those? Simmons?
Simmons has, yeah.
So same idea, right? They have a bunch of different categories. Star power, young talent, base running, defense, all this stuff.
All right.
They have 30 teams in the bigs. They rank from 30 all the way down to 1. The Dodgers, for instance, are the most watchable team in baseball.
Makes sense.
Any idea where the Red Sox check in?
1 being good,
1 being, the best, worst. The Dodgers, 30, I don't recall who they are, being the worst.
12?
Yes. 2.
I'm sorry, what?
2.
I've watched all their games this year. They're the second... Have they watched them play? They boot the ball around. They can't hit.
This must have been written before last week.
I would imagine it was written before the White Sox series, and they just had it ready to go. This is the justification.
What the heck?
The Red Sox are oozing with talent on the position player side. Abreu. By the way, I wouldn't start with Willy Abreu.
Well,
as good
maybe
as he's
it's alphabetical.
I
maybe. Abreu.
Hang on. Let's check that out.
Devers.
Christian Campbell. Campbell.
See.
2. Rafaela.
What?
3. Then plus Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer in AAA.
Oh, so they go young guns first.
Jaron Duran was last year's breakout star, a guy who did everything, hitting, defense, running the bases. Bregman and Devers have done it for years, and Crochet gives Boston a Cy Young candidate. I don't know how good the Red Sox will be.
Well, this isn't that. This is watchability.
Walker Buehler looks shaky, and the back of the bullpen has to prove itself, but this is going to be an entertaining team. The second most watchable in baseball, according to ESPN.
I kind of felt that way at the start of the year. I don't know if I would have put him 2 or not, but I definitely get where he's coming from, but through 17 games, they're not the most entertaining.
They didn't feel very watchable this week.
No.
With all the lack of offense and...
They don't hit home runs.
The chilly weather and their faces are all covered because of their face masks, which doesn't make them very watchable on top of it. And they lost a million games this week. They didn't do anything on offense this week. They didn't feel very watchable.
They're 21st in home runs?
Yeah.
Like, that's not great.
I like home runs. Chicks dig the long ball, and so does Jones. I like home runs. That doesn't make them watchable.
They'll steal a bag, which I like.
They'll swipe you a bag.
Trevor Story having a good... Don't sleep on him. 30-30 this year?
No.
No, I mean, how many games?
If you remember the old basketball cards would do like their per 40 minute numbers, which were so stupid.
It would melt my brain. I'm like, wait a minute, that guy averaged 25 a game? Right. You're like, no, he could have. Right. He might have.
Bill Winnington averaged 25 a game? No. These are his per 40 numbers.
Yeah.
If you did Trevor Story's per 162, yeah, he'll probably go 30-30. I don't think he's going to get to 120, never mind 162.
He's on pace right now for 29 dongs.
Oh, so not even.
No, he's on pace for 29 dongs.
Close.
Yeah.
This week he's coming around a little bit.
He is, but he'll run. He'll steal you a bag. But, no, like, watching a team, like, butcher routine plays or, like, you know, that's not entertaining.
No.
You want to see some web gems. Now, Rafaela has had a couple this year.
Yes.
Willier Abreu had a great throwout. Like, there have been some highlights. But you can't lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox because also winning is entertaining. And right now they've lost more games than they've won. They have a million errors. They strike out all the time. Now the Dodgers strike out a lot too, but it is offset by the sheer amount of home runs and runs that they're scoring.
Yeah. And let me tell you, even that started to correct a little bit with LA. I looked these up earlier in the show. Let me get them for you again.
They're still third most strikeouts, I mean.
But the team that the Red Sox are ahead of in both strikeouts and errors, which continued this weekend,
yeah,
are the 3-12 Colorado Rockies. The Red Sox have 19 errors compared to 15 for Colorado, so they have a big lead there.
Yeah.
Strikeouts, it's 165-160, but the Red Sox have played 2 extra games. Rockies have only played 15 games. But they lead the bigs in errors and strikeouts. That continued this weekend. Again, it was 11 strikeouts, 5 errors on Friday, 11 strikeouts, no errors Saturday. Yesterday was a little better and what I would consider reasonable. 7 strikeouts, no errors. That's offensive strikeouts. And the errors yesterday for the Red Sox. I mean, they're the worst in the big leagues in both of those categories.
Tough go.
They're a game below 500. I asked you this earlier. I'll ask you again, Keith. How much of that, like the general sloppiness, the approach at the plate, and the mistakes in the field, how much of that is on the manager, Alex Cora, who for the last couple of years got a free pass because roster was bad. Now the roster's better. It's more talented. And the same issues. They were third in baseball, rather, in errors the last 2 years, I think. Or was it second? I'll fact check myself. But they were high up in errors the last 2 years. You'd explain away the roster. They were second in strikeouts last year when Breslow and the driveline guys came in after being more middle of the pack in 2023. So how much of that is a reflection on Cora and the job he's done?
Yeah, so they were second last year and second the year before, and they're currently first in just total errors.
But again, and you could explain that away. I really didn't, but you could say, well, they're patching it together. You see a lot of this in the clubhouse. Guys are hurt. Trevor Story goes down.
Yeah.
It's a rotating door of guys at shortstop and second base. You're constantly trying to piece it together. I mean, this year in theory, Bregman's been should be an upgrade at third. He hasn't been great, but he should be an upgrade at third. Story's been healthy. Can't blame that. Their outfield is all gold glove caliber. So why all the errors? I mean, back at Cora.
So I don't put much of it on Cora only because he made the decision to take Devers out of there and was one of the reasons why you were so high in errors over the last several years. Devers would lead the league at third base anyway. Every single year, you had different issues at shortstop when Story trying to replace Story over the last couple of years. So the left side of your infield on paper is a lot better, but Bregman got off to a bad start, has 3 errors, which leads the team. Christian Campbell is really the only guy out there that you question, is this his position, present, future? Like, what do we do with him? But you want his bat in there. Most days, the outfield, I wouldn't change it.
No.
The first baseman, struggling, but like, okay, that's your first baseman. The catcher position is what it is. I don't really put it much on Cora. Like, unless, is he supposed to be out there, like, showing them the fundamentals of the game stuff? Like, these are pro baseball players.
It makes me wonder what they're doing in the spring when you're second, first in errors. I know we're only, I'm going to get early. 17 games in. Mm-hmm. But right now, you're lapping the field when it comes to errors. It makes me wonder what they're doing, but you're right. I mean, the players are guilty of it on some level. On Campbell specifically, is he a Cora pick to get in there at second base? Is that a driveline Breslow analytics thing?
See, that's the thing is I think Cora, like all managers, we give him a lot of credit for being able to have the former player background combined with being very open to stats, but also you feel like, hey, maybe there's like a gut feeling that he can make, right? He's sort of blending all like new school, old school stuff for a baseball manager. But still, like all other baseball managers, he is listening to all the stat guys. And if the driveline thing, and you're right, Campbell definitely could have been, hey, we love this guy. He's going to sign a contract with us. He's your second baseman. And even still, I think he's only, what, two of the errors, right? Like, it's really spread out. Like, everybody's got one. Right. Everybody's got one or two.
I mean, Bregman should have four. I think he's still at three,
I think. He's got three, but, right,
Campbell could have more. Campbell had the brutal play where Story got the error because he got it flipped to him so late because Campbell didn't step on second base.
Yeah,
so there's more plays on top of it. I mean, on some level, that's a reflection on the manager. Never mind giving him the weather excuse he was giving him in Toronto. Where, oh boy, I mean, it was still a rough day out there. It's still pretty. Hopefully, we get better weather in Chicago, and then it's cold in Chicago, and you've already given the players the excuse. So, on some level, Cora's on the list. We can debate where he is on the list, but on some level, he should be on there. And you know, the whole approach for the Red Sox. I'm with you on the strikeouts. I think it's
worse.
That's more on the driveline analytics Breslow guys than that is on Cora. But still, Cora had a chance to walk away last year. He didn't have to come back and take their money. And if you really
give him good money,
fundamentally rejected the way they're playing baseball here, and he really deep down disagreed with it and thought it wasn't the way to win, he could have walked away. And from what I'm told, he would have had his pick of a litter for other jobs.
Yeah.
Pick of the litter for other jobs.
I'm not sure that's really the case.
I always thought that was overblown. The Yankees didn't
maybe
open up.
Maybe he knew.
The Phillies didn't open up. The Dodgers didn't open up.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he really disagreed with it and thought this wasn't the way to play baseball, then he could have walked away from it and he took their money.
No, he did. But doesn't it seem counter to how he wants to play the game?
I mean,
he told afternoons
last week he hates strikeouts. So that's what he says.
They strike out all the time.
His actions are admittedly a little different.
Yeah, and I just wonder, like, at what point is he going to have to talk to certain guys? Because it is a weird kind of thing. Like, is this really what's best for the entire roster, like top to bottom? Like, shouldn't each guy be a little bit different in how their game is? Some guys, probably are better off hitting the ball in the air. I feel like Jaron, like, you have all these speed guys. Now, maybe that's too old school, but forever in baseball, like, speed guys don't hit the ball in the air. Hit the ball on the ground. Use your legs. Jaron Duran made a all-star game out of it last year by slapping the ball in the outfield and grabbing an extra base, and then from there, you're already in scoring position. Now it's either strikeout or flyout. That's basically every at-bat for these guys.
Well, and one thing Cora can't control, and I'll give him credit for this, he can control the lineup. I mean, I think to a degree. I mean, I'm sure analytics in the front office has a say in that too. But
Casas down finally.
Casas dropped down yesterday.
Yeah.
He hit sixth. Abreu moved up. So I think there's something to that. And I wonder how long until we see Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, Keith, we've been talking about it a lot. Like, well, where are they going to play and who's going to play their way out of a job? And will it be an injury to Story? Will Rafaela not hit? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe we just need to look at it as if the team keeps scuffling and they're 500 and underachieving, these guys may bang the door down and come in for something, you know, more external than, you know, an injury or poor play in front of them. They may just force their way in because the team needs a shakeup. Now, I was discouraged by some of what I read from Craig Breslow to Mass Live, Chris Cotillo, this weekend. He was asked about Anthony and when Anthony will come up. He said there are certain players, and we're hopeful and optimistic, we have a handful of those, who create their own timeline. But he said, but then the bulk of the guys who get to the big leagues do so because an opportunity arises on the big league club. I think this will likely be some balance of those things. So there will likely be some balance of those things. That doesn't sound like a GM who's ready to promote Roman Anthony. But if they keep scuffling and they're losing to Tampa and they're losing to the White Sox and they lost to Toronto last week and they're peeing away these games where they should have had a fast start, I wonder if there is external pressure to get those guys up regardless of how guys are playing in front of them.
Do you think Meyer and Anthony are more likely to get called up due to injury or bad performance by other starters?
Based on that answer from Breslow, probably injury.
Injury.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time, too. I mean, it's baseball. And I feel like this is what Trevor Story did a few years ago when he had that really hot wing, got really good. Not that I'm predicting injury, but it's just the track record for him has been he hasn't been healthy like since he's gotten here. And even when they acquired him, they ignored the red flags that surrounded him with his injuries. So if it's not him, it might be somebody else. And then that's when we see Anthony or Meyer. But also, this team is too good, or should be, where you shouldn't have to rely on those two guys to create a spark. Like, top to bottom, the lineup doesn't seem to have many holes in it, but
plenty these days.
Well, I mean, your best guy starts the year 0-for-20, right, and then everybody takes turns. Like, you can't have more than two guys hot in the lineup at any given time. They haven't been able to score runs over the last week, so maybe you do need Meyer or Anthony, but you shouldn't. I mean, top to bottom, you have the catcher spot, and that's about it. and I guess Rafaela, but he should be making up for it in the outfield.
617-779-7937. You can jump in on the Red Sox. How much of it's on Cora? And when do the young kids start knocking on the door? Is that now to give this team a spark for their lackluster 8-9 start? You can jump in here. Shedeur Sanders appears to be dropping. Dion, maybe or not, happy about it. Is it good or bad news for the Patriots that Shedeur is dropping in the draft? We'll get to that next.
Shedeur Sanders is headed to Las Vegas tonight for a visit with the Raiders. Now, this is intriguing because, of course, Las Vegas earlier this offseason made the trade, sending a third-round pick to Seattle for Geno Smith, who they also signed to an enhanced contract. But there certainly is always a longer-term need at the quarterback position. For Shedeur, he's also visited the Browns. He has visited the Giants. He spent time last week with Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Raiders, sitting at number six, are in a position where if Shedeur Sanders slides out of those top three spots, potentially that could be in play.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. That was Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, on Shedeur Sanders, where he could go in next week's draft. Draft day comes your way 10 days, 7 hours, 11 minutes, and 11 seconds. Make that 10, 9, 8 seconds from now.
Wow.
If you're curious, we've given you a couple of different draft segments here today. Our mock draft Monday, we did that at 10:45. It's on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. It's free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also listen to the first installment of Hate It or Love It, draft prospect with Travis Hunter. Would you love that pick? Would you hate that pick?
You notice how Jones calls that hate it or love it, where most would probably call it love it or hate it?
I think a lot of people would do that.
Yeah.
Hate it or love it.
Love it or hate it.
The underdog's on top.
Right. I just say hate it or love it because of the song.
Exactly.
All right.
But maybe it's my glass half empty, glass half full way of looking at it.
That's what it sounds like.
It's a good observation there.
You're leading the people by putting hate it first.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people love the Travis Hunter segment.
As they should.
Or pick, rather.
The pick. Of course they should.
So they can vote at Jones and Keefe. That's up on socials, Twitter and Instagram. Vote along. It's a very popular pick at number four. Should he get there, which he likely won't, we'll be tracking this going into the draft, all the various prospects they could take at pick number four. Shedeur Sanders falling. I can see this one a couple of different ways, Keith.
Okay.
You wanted him to go in the top three.
Two. Yeah, top three. Yeah.
That would have been ideal.
Yes.
If it goes Ward and Sanders, and then maybe even Jackson Dart, as you've said. 1, 2, 3. I mean, that'd be the best of all worlds.
Yes.
But two in the top three felt realistic.
Right.
Given the needs of the Browns and Giants. We know Ward's going one, it seems. So that would have been ideal. Sanders falling could still work out for the Patriots. You could raffle off the pick at four to a team looking to move up the board. Maybe that's New Orleans at nine. Maybe other teams could be looking to move up the board. And, you know, New Orleans gets a little squirrely about it and they want to move up to number four. As Pelissero highlights there, maybe the Raiders are in play at pick six for Shedeur Sanders. They need to get in front of that team. There's only a couple options to do that. And maybe the Pats at four are that pick. The other way to look at it is Sanders falling is bad news. Maybe he goes to New Orleans at nine. They now need a quarterback, it sounds, because Derek Carr, who isn't great anyways, is now hurt and may miss a chunk of time. They may have to draft a quarterback. So now you're going to have Hunter and Carter off the board, likely in that order, and you're taking the best of what's left at four. How do you view Sanders sliding, good or bad?
Obviously terrible. Like, if this is all true, I still maintain with 10 days to go, teams end up, when it's forced to it, they always overreact and overdraft quarterbacks. So even if Shedeur Sanders is on like a big board scale, the 20th, 25th best prospect, that doesn't mean he's going 20th or 25th, right? That still means he could go in the top three. I still would think there's a possibility of that, just because the teams picking above the Patriots all desperately need a quarterback. So how cute do you want to get with it? You know, like, I've brought up the Kenny Pickett draft, because that's really the one that stands out where, man, he should not have been a first rounder, but a team that needed a quarterback ended up taking him in the first round. But he probably was not the 20th best prospect. Mm-hmm. He was probably like the 50th best prospect and got overdrafted by at least a round, maybe two rounds. Whereas I think Shedeur Sanders probably is a first round pick.
I like him.
So the chances of those guys getting passed over multiple times, I still think is rare. Now, maybe there's the shot where our Jackson Dart becomes the guy everybody falls in love with. Fine. Doesn't really matter for us as Patriots fans who goes ahead of him. I think Sanders is a better pro prospect than Dart is, but don't care if Dart ends up going two or three. I just can't imagine. Like, the mock draft we looked at today had only two quarterbacks in the first round, and it was, what, 1-9. I still think it's going to be higher than that. I really do. Most drafts in recent years have always been way more than that.
I'd be pretty surprised at this point. And I don't like him as a prospect. I don't think you're very fond of him either. But it seems like there's a lot of love for Jackson Dart out there.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go in the first round. That doesn't mean he goes early, in the top 10. But I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go in the first
round. Last year at this time, it was pretty unanimous that it was going to be quarterback, 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 1-3. There was some debate on whether it was going to be Daniels or May at 2. I think after that, there was this push that people, the Patriots like J.J. McCarthy. But we all kind of eventually laughed that off. But I don't think anybody expected him to really go top 10, let alone Michael Penix and Bo Nix.
No one expected Penix to go there. There was a lot of talk if the Patriots passed on Drake May at 3 and they took Marvin Harrison or they took Joe Alt. They could get those guys at the top of round 2.
Right. I wanted a Harrison-Nix combo. I was like, oh, they could get this. And you're like, there's more teams that want quarterbacks. But 6 in the top 12? Now, that's going to be one of those years that I think is sort of like you kind of prop that up. And I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take for 6 quarterbacks to get taken this year. It'll probably a long time. But you only need 2 for the Patriots. I still think that happens.
Do you make anything of the tweets over the weekend? Lou Riddick has had a bunch of odd comments about Shadur and kind of hinting that he knows something. So he tweeted out, this was on Friday, the 9th pick is going to be all kinds of interesting. And then he has fingers crossed emoji. Dion quote tweeted that with the eyeballs. So I have trouble translating these things sometimes.
Yeah.
The implication seems to be Shadur's dropping. He's in play at pick number 9. That's where Dion wants him to go. Lou Riddick has had the report before that he does not want Shadur to go in the top 3 and that Dion doesn't want to see him go in the top 3. They'd actually like him to fall. So the implication being Sanders and pick 9 to New Orleans is kind of where they want him to land. Do you put any stock in that? Is that just weird social media games? Like, what is that?
So you said Dion tweeted the eyeball
emoji? Dion hit the eyeball emoji.
You know what that means?
What?
Send me naked pictures of you.
Oh, my gosh.
That is what that is. So he's asking Lou Riddick.
For nudes.
That was like...
I think.
He meant to do that in the DMs, and he's actually asking Lou Riddick for some below-the-belt shots.
That's how I would view it.
Okay, that's interesting.
But, and I guess...
I said I have trouble translating, so I'm happy I brought you in.
So does New Orleans... is a much better place to go than Cleveland or New York, I guess?
I don't think so.
Wouldn't the higher you get drafted, the better it is?
Well, I mean, you could make a case. Pittsburgh at 21 would be a great landing spot.
That's a team
that was in the playoffs a year ago, and they just got DK Metcalf. So you want to fall far, fine.
NFL teams turn around.
Or like the Rams, you want to go sit and learn from Matt Stafford. I wouldn't want to if I were a first-round pick, but maybe you could spin that.
Like the nature of the NFL, 5 years ago, there wasn't a better place in the world than New England.
I don't think New Orleans is any better off than Cleveland or the Giants. I think they're all roughly the same, but maybe there's an indication there. They're just trying to, manifest that.
He's
not falling.
Yeah.
We want to go number 9. Yeah. That's the place we want. They're just trying to soften the landing on what's going to be some
immediate bad press. Do you want the
most recent
Dion tweet?
Yes. More eyeballs?
From 9:30 this morning.
Okay.
Stop rushing and take your time. This next move can't be fast and it has to be right. When we rush, we tend to forget, overlook, and lose focus on the true things that matter. Let's relax, lock in, and take a deep breath, then go.
Okay.
We got this, baby. Let's do this. Hashtag Coach Prime.
I like Twitter better when they limited it to 140 characters.
That's too much.
That's too much. You shouldn't be allowed to go on that long in one tweet.
It's way too
How
much.
Long was that?
That was a long tweet. That was a long tweet for Coach Prime. He is verified, so yeah, you should just go
you
on
really
days.
Go.
Just go for days.
Buck Wild there.
Uh-huh.
So, Shadur sliding, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Patriots? I think you can spin it one way or the other, but I would tend to agree with Keefe. I don't think it's great that he is reportedly falling in these drafts, if you believe the Twitter flirting with Lou Riddick and Deion Sanders. Next level flirting. I didn't even realize
it's
what was going
top.
On there. It was right under my nose.
Uh-huh.
617-779-7937. We'll mix some thoughts in on that, and we'll get back to Jaylen Brown. He had injections in his knee leading into the playoffs, according to ESPN. Is it time to get nervous for Jaylen Brown and worried about the Celtics? We'll do that next.